So in Dallas County, ETP received a large favorable jury verdict and judgment based on the jury's finding under the five-factor test that ETP and Enterprise had formed a general partnership for purposes of exploring pursuing an oil pipeline. And the Dallas Court of Appeals reversed that based on the fact that there were express conditions precedent in the preliminary agreements that these two large companies had entered into. Usually these cases involve your so-called unsophisticated parties, you know, the Larry Curley and Moe, you know, Bubba and Bubette have gone into business and just haven't really given much thought to what their arrangement is. Here, the two parties, ETP and Enterprise, have preliminary agreements, you know, letter of intent, confidentiality agreement, et cetera, that said we don't have anything binding until we enter definitive agreements that have been approved by our boards. But then they proceeded to refer to each other as partners and to share expenses and so forth. And the jury found that there was a partnership and that there had been a breach of the duty of loyalty. And again, there was a very large verdict, a very large judgment. The Dallas Court of Appeals and the Texas Supreme Court said because the conditions precedent were not met, then the parties did not have a binding agreement. They did not have a partnership. In particular, they did not have a partnership. And on the surface, this seems, fairly sensible. The court pointed to the common law principle, the sacred principle of freedom of contract. The Texas Supreme Court has gone out of its way in the last year, not just in the partnership arena, but in other arenas, to exalt the principle of freedom of contract. And I think that's going to bleed into the partnership area. And the court said, hearkened back to its previous significant opinion in Ingram v. Deere and said the legislature didn't intend to spring surprise or accidental partnerships on parties, and freedom of contract is important. So if they say they don't have a partnership until something in particular happens, a condition precedent is met, then they don't. And the bottom line, the court said, is that this condition precedent will be conclusive. If it hasn't been met, that will be conclusive on the issue of partnership. But the court did say that an agreement like this would not, of course, bind third parties, and we do not consider its effect on them. Well, we could have another 45 minutes of discussion about what that means. The statute says if parties don't have a partnership amongst themselves, then they don't have a partnership as to third parties. Unless, I mean, there is a recognition that by estoppel, the so-called partnership by estoppel doctrine, that's not an actual partnership. That's where third parties may rely on representations that there was a partnership, and a third party might impose the consequence of a partnership without there actually being a partnership. This statement raises the question that it may, you know, that there may be something beyond partnership by estoppel, that the parties may be able to disclaim partnership amongst themselves, but somehow have created a partnership as to third parties beyond perhaps the concept of estoppel. So when you dig a little deeper, though, here into the court's opinion, again, on the surface, we agree that we don't have one, freedom of contract, we shouldn't be bound to one. But the court said whether there's been a waiver of a condition precedent in this partnership formation context is going to need to be shown by evidence that specifically addresses or is tied to the condition precedent. And relying on evidence of any of these factors would be double dipping. You're going to have evidence outside of the factors. Well, this is a little perplexing, again, when one thinks about it, because the factors include an expression of an intent to be partners. So if we say, if we initially have a condition precedent, we're not going to have a partnership until things fly. And then we enter into a partnership agreement that says we are partners, and it says that we're going to share profits and share control and make contributions. So we could check off every factor under the five-factor test. But according to this statement, we won't be able to look at that. We will have to find some more direct, specific, explicit waiver of the condition precedent to conclude that we have a partnership. That seems odd or extreme, but that would be the literal application of this language. It remains to be seen how all this plays out. The bottom line probably is that, you know, sophisticated parties will be successful in disclaiming a partnership relationship in most cases, or in all cases in which they do so. Unsophisticated parties who do not impose a condition precedent or explicitly disclaim the partnership relationship will still be able to inadvertently fall into the partnership form of business. But I've already taken more time to breeze through this than I intended, since we have this topic again on a subsequent panel, teed up on a subsequent panel. But it's an important opinion, and I'll let Doug, as I'm shifting to the next topic here, wrap that up or make any closing comments he wants to make about the ETP enterprise case, and then we'll move into another topic area.
Well, thank you, Beth. I mean, we could certainly talk about it forever. I, in fact, have spent most of my summer trying to write a law review article about it. So I will spare you. I will leave that to Christine and John Hale, who are going to have that discussion. But it's certainly an interesting case. I'll just say this.